You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody in the niche? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, October 2nd, 2024, and I'm your old pal, Joey O'Brien.
And I'm Troy, nerve pain in the membrane, LaValle.
Nerve pain in the membrane. Troy is here today by just sheer will.
Yeah.
Sheer will. He got some back pain resulting in nerve pain. Getting old, man.
It's really sad, but there's no off season for Cannon Fodder. I did something to my back at the gym last week. Like, wasn't doing anything different from what I normally do, and I was like, "Ooh, something's wrong with my back." And then I woke up the next day. I'm like, "I feel pretty good." We recorded all day, and like midway through the day, I was like, "Motherfucker, what is going on with my back that I hurt yesterday?" And then it just progressed from there. I either have like a slip disc or a herniated disc, and it's pressing down on a fucking nerve, whether it's my sciatic nerve or something. And now my back, a week later, my back is actually pretty good. I'm ready to go back to the gym. I can't walk because my left leg is just fucking tingling nerve. So I gotta go see a sports medicine doctor. It's a whole fucking thing.
So I'm assuming you didn't hear 1 minute of the Joe and Jared Cannon Fodder from last week. But that cold open was Jared's testicular pain.
Oh, been there.
He has a phantom testicle pain and has had to go to the doctor like multiple times to try to figure out what's going on.
Did they figure it out?
No. Still up in the air. Still trying to, he's got to go to another thing like soon. So it's just a bunch of old guys.
That sounds like hernia. That sounds like hernia.
Could be.
I mean, when I had that, I was like, what the fuck's going on down there? My doctor was like, let me just stick my finger as far up your scrotum as I can until you cry like a child. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to send you to somebody else because I'm not sure. I'm like, then why'd you do that? And I went to another doctor. He's like, oh, you've got at least one, if not two hernias. And I'm like, oh
my God.
Oh, doc. All right. So what do I got to do for that? He's like, surgery. I'm like, there's got to be another way. Nope. You could die someday if you don't get it fixed. So that sounds like a hernia. Been there, done that. But dude, that's the thing. You get old and it's like every week now, like my thumbnail is falling off. I got like a little infection in my thumb. They have to remove my nail. It's just like you're slowly decaying.
That's so funny.
Throw you in a box.
You really are. My wife told me the other day, she was like, I just read something that there is a massive like drop off in your physical body at 45 and 65.
Mm-hmm. Feel it.
So it's right around here. You can just feel it. It's just like something new every single day. I am not like a neck pain or back pain guy. Knock on wood, I'm very lucky. I've never had a lot of those issues, like chronic pain. I have got a neck thing from up here at the base of my head down into my shoulder here for about 3 weeks now. And I just I can't turn my head one way.
Bend there.
And I'm stretching. I'm doing it, and nothing's changed anything. I'm just like, I'm so old. It's constant something.
Dude,
every night
brutal.
I go to sleep.
And I have like turned my life around. I've lost a lot of weight. I've gotten in great shape, and it doesn't matter.
No,
your body is still 40. No. Now it's 46 years old. It's an
That's
old
why
body.
I drink beer and eat pizza at every meal. Because it doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter.
Doesn't. You're going to die anyway.
I must still enjoy the ride.
What's up, Nash? It is great to be back, to have Troy back in the virtual FOD stewed as we continue to talk about the Glass Cannon podcast, particularly Gatewalker. We're going to get back into it today, catch up on 2 weeks of content. Of course, we've got some news for you as well. Regarding the episodes, we'll get into some nice We Are Stupid, some really good stuff that Professor Eric has laid out for us. And then we got you guys, what you've written in with listener mail. So kicking it right off with some news. This can be quick. There really isn't much. This is kind of fun coming up. Today, McD and I are streaming again this week. Actually, there's two pieces of news on the McD and I streaming thing. We've been streaming, having a great time, going live every Wednesday, 2 Eastern. Got the same plan today. Though it might be like 2:30 today, something like that. We're going live, continuing our little, Remnant 2 playthrough. It's been great. It's been really fun. But we're talking about getting together next Monday, night and playing a little, going back old school to one of our favorites, original Halo. Halo Combat Evolved, and doing a legendary co-op run. So the highest degree of difficulty co-op run. Stay tuned for some info on that, but wow, save the date, Monday night, October 7th. We might have a primetime fun stream with that. We'll see. What else? Friday night this week. I don't know if you realize this, Troy, but Glass Cannon Live Boston premieres on YouTube this Friday night. So those of you that did not get to see the Boston show live, or those of you that did, you can watch it for the first time or again this Friday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, premiering on our YouTube channel. And then we just have, we're 2 weeks out, basically 2 weeks out from Portland and LA. I mean, it's really 10 days. It's really a week is really what it is from here.
Yeah.
Till we're actually, October 10th, we're in Portland. And so that's coming up next week. I just wanted to mention to everybody that there is one volunteer slot for merch in each city. So one in Portland, one in LA. So if you want to come to that show, we take care of your ticket. You get free entrance into VIP. If you want to come and volunteer on the merch team and help us move merch during the show, you have the option. Reach out, contact at glasscannonnetwork.com, and just put volunteer for merch in the subject line, and we'll get back to you, McDee. Let you know if we can get you on the staff.
Dude, I want to sell out LA. We're so close. We got a ton of tickets in Portland. The PNW Nation always shows up, despite how much shit I give them. And that show is going to be rocking. But LA, there's like 48, 46 tickets left. I know we can sell that. That's not a huge venue. It's just LA for some reason. People are weird. Take an Uber out and come hang. There's going to be West Coast Nation, Glass Cannon like personalities there. Help us sell those final tickets. Grab some loser friend. Bring them along. Buy them a ticket that'll change their life.
Yeah, do us a favor. Help us to get to that sellout in LA. All right, let's get back to the Glass Cannon podcast.
Yes.
Episode 52. Some may say the one-year anniversary of Gatewalkers, somewhere in that range at episode 52, of course, something like that. This is an interesting one, as it is a real bait and switch, almost literally. We are baited, I think, in a way into thinking that we have to go back and fight the snail again, especially the way for the cliffy for episode 51 was, where you come back to the Blood Red River, back to those rocks again that claimed Talitha's life, that almost wiped the whole party. How are we going to handle this? We're terrified crossing over this thing. Talk to me about the decision to remove that that snail from the encounter and have it already be dead. What was the thinking behind it?
This is from 2 weeks ago, right? Like, I can't remember what the book said. Like, they were pretty clear on that you could bypass some of these encounters and then you could bring them back on the road back. And that's what I did with the guardians at the quarry.
Yeah.
With the Amalekana, I just felt like it wouldn't. There was no reason to go back there. That fight happened, and it ended the way it ended. The revenge fight to me wasn't interesting, showing that something greater than took out the Amalekana and foreshadowing the fight ahead. That to me was much more interesting. So I just chose to do that. I can't remember if the book is like, oh, you could fight it again. You can do whatever the fuck you want, right?
I think it wouldn't
be interesting.
I'd be a little torn. You're telling me you weren't torn? Wasn't a hard decision?
No,
you
never. At all.
So the revenge fight, why is that uninteresting from a story or gameplay perspective?
I shouldn't say uninteresting. It just wasn't interesting to me. And I felt like, especially now that you've leveled up, the fight would be a lot easier.
We had leveled up since?
Yeah, you leveled up since, because you level up when you reach the Oasian settlement. I kind of already did that with the Guardians. I didn't want to do it again. And also, like, it just shows the futility of adventuring, like that this fucking snail killed Talitha and you never got to fight it again. That futility to me was a lot more interesting than like you guys just stomping it and having that moral victory. And also, like, I was much more interested in, especially where you'd already brought back an encounter before in the quarry, I was much more interested in foreshadowing the more dire encounter.
Yeah. I also felt like the circumstances of that fight were what made it so deadly, not just the creatures attack numbers.
Yeah.
It was really that we were spread out over those slippery rocks and all that kind of stuff. Whereas this time around, we could have taken extra measures to be way safer on shore, draw it out, fight it on our terms, and then you just mash it. And in a way, it may take away a little bit from what that creature meant to the story, and especially to Talitha. So, yeah, I think that is interesting. And of course, you have the... you're teasing, you're planting that seed that, oh my God, but there's something even bigger out here that killed that. So yeah, very interesting decision. And then that moves us, you know, to the end of that episode where the Drake emerges, the Drake reveals itself, and we are just ice cold rolling. I mean, just natural ones left and right. This horrible poison that's coming out. You know, we'll talk about that and We Are Stupid. Just a really brutal encounter, and that'll roll us, because we had a mid-combat Cliffy, and that'll roll us into episode 53, the Drake fight. The biggest thing I want to take out of this is that we were rolling poorly. Things were going very badly, and it looked like they could kill it. It looked like it could kill us, particularly because of the way that poison ticked, and particularly because we didn't know that it ended. Like, we thought it would be forever until you cured it. Otherwise, it would kill you.
Yeah.
And so it kind of felt like even defeating the Drake, we would still die. And it was very dark times. So you, I mentioned something in passing about, like, well, how come it doesn't attack all the elves? And you're like, careful what you wish for. So you, like, turn, attack the elves with an AoE blast. They all fail and start dying, particularly Illelli. So now you have the risk of Illelli dying. You have the risk of us dying, which would, logically, the logical conclusion of that line of thinking is, how can the adventure continue as it's written? Mm-hmm. If the one person that knows how to get you back is dead, and also, just to add it on a little bit, you're all dead too. It's like, how do you pick up from there? You said in the moment, like, everything is on the table here, including not continuing this adventure path and closing it up and starting something new. How much of that is like last second bravado or last second just trying to make good content versus like a well thought out, like, truly, no, you would have stopped this campaign and started a new one, because we've never stopped before on this network, mm-hmm. what, you know, due to a TPK. So talk me through the thinking there. And if you were really serious, if it came to a TPK, if you'd end this adventure path.
Yeah, I was definitely serious, even though I gave the elves healing capabilities afterwards. It still didn't save you guys, because I wasn't using those healing capabilities on you. They were trying to keep themselves alive. But like, if a number of you had died, or if the worst had happened and Illelli had, I guess if Illelli had died and any of the other elves had survived, I'm sure one of them could have figured it out. But
yeah,
I was being serious and really, you know, I think this campaign, there's a lot of people that really like it, but there's a lot of people that the campaign is not resonating for. And I think that's true of people at the table as well. And so that's interesting to me. Like, I feel like I enjoy the campaign, but I also recognize that it's not hitting home for a lot of people, or it's too slow of a burn for even you guys at times. And so I think that if it had happened, maybe that would be a good excuse to just try something new. Like, I still believe in the AP. I believe in what we can do with it. But I also have to be aware that it's not a home run for everybody like Giant Slayer was. And so that's interesting for me. And so throwing that out there and seeing what happens, I think I would have been ready to move on. I don't have anything else planned. I need like a week, I guess. We'll take a week off and come up with something. But you know, talk about be careful what you wish for, because no matter what we do, there's always going to be dissent, right? Like, we're large enough now that
there will be, you know, acceptance and joy and celebration.
Yeah, yeah.
And dissent. There'll be both.
Yeah, you can't change what you're doing just because there's a certain contingent of people that don't enjoy it. You just can't do that. But I do think it's important to recognize that it's not resonating, and then see, like, okay, well, is there a way you can there's a way that you can get there? And, you know, I don't know, maybe we can, maybe we can't. We don't have to be everything to everyone, you know.
For sure. But negative concerns, negative comments, dissent in some way is not irrelevant because it is dissent. It can be irrelevant based on what the arguments are foundationally based on, which is just like, oh, that's something that's just not going to change about us or our game or whatever. But then there are other things where you can be like, you know what? That is a good point. There is something lacking here with X, Y, or Z, whether it's how the narrative is portrayed or how the characters are portrayed, that can be can evolve, can get better, you know, can improve. So I don't know the details of what those might be, but I was curious if you were just sort of like, you know, in the moment just saying it, or if you really would, because I couldn't logically wrap my head around how the campaign would continue in an interesting way if everybody died, including the you know, I guess it doesn't really matter. Like you said, there could always be another elf.
There's so many ways to do it, right? But like maybe this was an excuse to just be like, eh, you know, let's start fresh. This is our most, not to take away from any other shows that we do, this is our most important show. Like this show needs to be a home run. And I watch
it.
It has
the most listeners, yeah.
It has the most listeners, and it also has the most
unequivocally
possibility for impact and growth for the company because of its sort of status and the way it's put out there. It's in studio, the video, all the different ways you can access the show. And so you want it to hit. Now I watch the show every single week, to give notes to Francis on the edit, and I'm watching and I'm like, I think this is fantastic. Like I see areas where it can be better, but I think that there is a flow in the way that we play with each other, the way that we are just like, candid and off the cuff from the banter to everything. I think it's the best thing we've ever done. But I also have to recognize that other people don't enjoy it. They either don't enjoy the story, they don't enjoy our characters, they don't enjoy the way I GM it, they don't enjoy our ability to apply the Pathfinder system to the best of our ability. You know, there's a lot of different reasons. So, you know, it's worth taking a look at for sure.
I wonder if you, like as a GM, if you have a couple players that a campaign doesn't seem to be resonating with, you're doing a pre-written campaign. It's like, when do you pull the plug? When do you say, you know what, we've played 10, 15 sessions of this. It's still not sinking in with two of my four players. Let's play a new campaign, you know? Or do you see it through to the end? I don't know. It's tricky. Because what if two people are like, love this campaign? You know, it is tough.
Yeah.
I think it's about addressing those individual concerns with your players at the table, being like, well, what are you not into about this? And maybe that could be changed. You know, that could be tweaked a little bit without throwing the baby out with the bathwater, right? But
every player wants something different out of a game. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, we have five players. I think there's crossover, but everybody wants something different. It's just that you can't give it all in each episode. You know what I mean? You've got to find a way to meet it out and – you know, I don't know.
I actually think it's rare and pretty crazy to ever assume that five adults playing a game together would all like it all the time, right? Because it's very like that's a rare and wonderful thing. I think, I mean, we had Giant Slayer was great. We had times in Giant Slayer where I was like, this is so boring right now.
Yeah,
it has stretches, but it might have been the same time where Grant was on cloud nine. Because he's just like, oh, my favorite thing in the world is just to shoot 100 fire giants in a row and kill them in one shot. It's my favorite thing. Yeah. You know, like, so it just, it's always going to be a little bit up in the air. There's no perfect campaign, though some people can say, like, oh, we had a great campaign. Yeah, that's great. But that is a rare and wonderful thing. Cherish it when you have it. But yeah, I don't know. I have definitely, I was on the naysayer side of the AP for 20 plus episodes, especially in those teens and early 20s. I was just like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I just didn't like the mystery. But but where it's gotten to now, and particularly the cliffhanger of 53, it's so freaking cool. It's ridiculous right now. So I'm very in at the moment. But that's just me at the moment.
Yeah, it's hard. It suffers from the same problem Strange Aeons did in a way where like there's nothing really grounding the characters other than the, you know, the stuff that's grounding them is something that all happened off screen. And that's difficult. Like with Giant Slayer, you witness the, you know, you are a witness to that murder. You know,
you
what
were
mean?
Attacked.
And you were there. That guy that you just talked to that everybody liked, he's dead. You are thrown into this. And then, I realized very early on how important True Now and the people of True Now were to the story. So I kept it going much longer than the adventure tells you to. By book two, when you leave True Now, you never go back to True Now. You never hear about True Now again. That grounding, I think, helped Giant Slayer make it what it is today. You don't have that in Gatewalkers. So, and Gatewalkers doesn't need to be Giant Slayer, but I think that lack of grounding is giving this sort of ship without a rudder feeling to the characters.
Yeah. And I think that we have to find another way, because it is important. The characters have to feel, grounded, motivated, and relatable. You know, to some degree, you need to understand why a person is there, and risking their life. If you don't understand that, then of course, as a listener, you're going to be like, well, why do I care? What are the stakes? That's interesting. I think it took me at least 20 episodes to start finding it with Brother Ramius, finding his voice, finding why he's really there and what is motivating him to continue. And it just takes time sometimes. All right, let's keep it going here, because I do want to do a little We Are Stupid. Professor Eric did some great work on these episodes, and the, like you said, some people don't like the way we apply Pathfinder 2E to this. Well, let's see what we did wrong.
Shop with Rakuten and you'll get it. What's it? It's the best deal, great cashback rates, and more savings on your shopping. So join Rakuten and start getting cash back at a variety of brands like Marks & Spencer, Mango, and Selfridges. You can even shop the sales and still get cash back. Just start your shopping with Rakuten to save money at over 400 brands. Join for free at rakuten.co.uk or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
Some good ones here, really good ones. I'm very excited about, like, taking forward. So first off, in episode 52... escape attempts that use athletics or acrobatics are not attack rolls. So this is, we had this little discussion/debate. And here it goes from Professor Eric, quoting from the book. When you use a strike action or make a spell attack, you attempt a check called an attack roll, unquote. So it's a strike action or a spell attack. Those make, quote, an attack roll. So it's only, and then this is Professor Eric. So it's only strikes or spell attacks. Bless would not apply. Not all actions with the attack trait are an attack roll.
The important now, distinction. Why did that matter though? I'm trying to, it's still, you still apply the map to it.
You apply the map to it, but does it benefit from bless?
Ah,
was the question. Do you get the benefits of Bless? Because Bless benefits attack rolls. Like, this is not an attack roll.
Okay, I get you. Okay, that's very cool. All right, so that's
And he also said, in parentheses, this has been a massive source of confusion and has been tweaked a little over the life of 2E via errata and other published clarifications. So
very cool.
This is a question other people have had. That's the only one from episode 52. We also talked all about Ignition in that episode. I don't want to go into all those details again, because honestly, I don't think it's interesting from an audio standpoint. The questions of these numbers of like the D4 to the D10 to the D12, like you kind of need to be reading it to understand what is being said and what is the problem. But I think we've gotten there. Professor Eric agrees that we have gotten to the right place on that, on Ignition. So we should be good going forward on that, I hope. That is a tricky one though. And it's also pre-remaster. So it kind of like, things get a little bit wonky there. All right, let's move on to episode 53. Troy, did you know that you made it even easier for us?
About the trigger not doing damage?
Yeah. What's wrong with you?
I know. I talk about, could have been a TPK. Well, I mean, all right. You're talking about twisting tail?
Yes.
All right. So a creature within reach of the Drake's Stinger uses a move action or leaves a square during a move action it's using. That's the trigger. The effect, the Jungle Drake strikes, capital S, the target with its stinger. If it hits, the Jungle Drake disrupts the creature's action. So it's because it has capital S for strike, it should have done damage as well.
Yeah.
The reason I read it that way, one, I'm trying to give you guys anything you can here. And it doesn't say it does damage. It says if it hits, the Jungle Drake disrupts the creature's action. Is there so many times where it spells it out for you. Like, if it hits, it does damage, and it does this. And it doesn't say that. That's an inconsistency on Paizo's part. But capital S, from now on means you take damage as well. Yeah, I mean, I wonder.
It is not obvious. It's not a stupid mistake. It is a totally understandable mistake that I grappled with. That I grappled with in Blood of the Wild. So I have an ability. There's a ranger ability called Disrupt Prey. It's a class feat that you can get at higher levels. Mm-hmm. It's a reaction. The trigger, your hunted prey is within your reach and uses a manipulate action or a move action, or leaves a square during a move action it's using, or leaves the square, you know. So it gives you an attack of opportunity, but only against your hunted prey. And then in the text, make a melee strike against your prey. If the attack is a critical hit, you disrupt the triggering action. And the name of the feat is Disrupt Prey. So it seems like all you're trying to do is disrupt them. It doesn't say anything about damage. It just says, make a melee strike. If it is a critical hit, you disrupt the triggering action. And I had to go in and dig into this and realize the capital S strike meant you go back and refer to your strike stuff, and then that gives you what the damage is or whatever. So,
totally. I'm there right now. Like, the strike action, critical success is you make a damage roll, and double it success is you make that. So it's baked in. Capital S means it's damage. That's a bonus. So, yeah, I mean, talk about.
I thought it was TPK. Strange when you first said it, and I didn't want to fight it on air, but I thought that it was just like a balancing feature. Like, it was just a cool feature that wasn't meant to really hurt the players. But I was wrong. It was meant to really, really hurt the players.
Yeah. Well, hey, live and learn now. We see capital S, and because I see it's an inconsistency. I wish I could call it out, but I know I've seen things that are like, it does the damage and this. But
yeah,
it's good to know.
Let's talk about poison. So poison, I was a little up in arms on the poison ticking the moment you get hit, and then ticking again on your turn, so basically twice in a round if you go after the creature, right? Mm-hmm. So Professor Eric lays this out and says, the poison recovery rolls and the double tick on the application / next turn has been a point of contention for quite some time. he says, I feel it was a more ambiguous pre-remaster with a lot of people thinking that you track rounds of the applying creature, which we talked about. Right. He's like, but then the problem with that has you keeping track of the initiative of a dead creature, possibly, which is frustrating. And he says, but it feels like the wording has been subtly changed in the remaster to be a little bit more unified. But that remaster has basically confirmed that you take it when it's applied and you take it again on your turn. So it is brutal.
He says,
yes, it can feel very unfair to fail on an applying creature's turn and then again on your turn with very little time in between. But that is the rules as written. My personal opinion is that more poison should be written with a one round onset, i.e. no additional damage until the creature's turn, just like persistent damage.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why not have it just be like that? He's like, that balances out the ease of bookkeeping without double dipping, and it feels narratively believable that it takes a few seconds for poison to start taking effect, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good point. Thank you, Professor Eric.
Well, we took a second. We edited it out of the show, but we took a second on air, and I was like, all right, let's get this right, because that's a lot of extra damage. And you and I both felt good about what I read. I don't think I read it on air. I can't remember. But anyways, I'm glad we got that one right.
I didn't have to like it. But I felt good about the interpretation of the rule.
Yeah. There were people that are pretty confident that we got that wrong. And I'm glad that we got it right.
Yeah, I think it looks like we got it right, according to Professor Eric. All right. So let's talk about Dimensional Assault, Sydney's blink ability.
Yeah.
As a means to get rid of prone. He said,
it's not even as a means to get rid of prone. It was she set up a situation, and to me, it was fine. Like, if she was using it just to get rid of prone, we could have a new conversation. But go ahead. I'm curious about this.
He just says, I feel that rules as written, it does not remove prone, which is a condition by the book. It needs to be removed by some action.
Right.
However, it feels pretty strongly within the flavor of the spell, and it's great in Rule of Cool. In the moment of combat, that came up in here, he says, I definitely allow it, but I'd probably want to put some limits on it in the future, maybe requiring an acrobatics check or something. He said, as Kate mentioned, kip up is a level 7 feet to make standing up from prone a free action. So to give that for free seems a little bit strong, he says. The teleportation trait at least
stops
moving.
But it's not for free. You have to use Dimensional Assault to use it.
Yeah, but you're also getting movement and an attack out of that anyway. Yeah. The getting rid of the prone for free as well seems pretty powerful. Mm. But anyway, something to think about. You know, there's no definite answer because it's a very fringe case. He says by raw, he feels it probably doesn't remove prone. But, you know, whatever. Interpret it how you want to, but let's just maintain some consistency.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then lastly,
it says the only way you can remove prone is to stand up. You know, so right. She didn't stand up, but she used something. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think it's hard to say that that's as written, but I could see why you could say that. It's very unclear.
It is unclear. It's a weird little fringy case.
I like the way we resolved it. And that's really, and everybody at the table did. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I'm going to sneeze.
That's good for your brain.
That was good. All right. Last thing, the poison critical fail. He says, I think you've fallen into a bit of an ambiguous place. Okay. Your standard recovery check, if it fails, it increases your dying by 2. Says, if you take damage while you already have the dying condition, increase your dying condition value by 1 or by 2 if the damage came from an attacker's critical hit or your own critical failure. So it's 100% obvious if it was a critical hit or a critical fail against a damage effect. But in the case of a poison affliction, though, I think the rules are a bit silent. The critical fail doesn't do damage. It just changes the stage of the poison that you're at. And then the poison ticks. So I could see it going either way. And like most things, just pick an option that works for your table and then remain consistent on that option so that you're not relitigating it when it comes up again. So basically we said if you critically failed the poison save and then took the damage from the stage, and that brought you to 0, that would bring you right to dying, too. We were having this discussion because it could have killed Asta in this moment. So it got pretty intense, and she ended up passing the roll. Or no, she failed the roll, but you didn't do enough damage to take her to 0.
Yeah.
So I found it interesting. Here's my big thing about it. The focus of the question is, you critically failed the poison saving throw, and that just changed the stage by 2. Mm-hmm. You don't double the damage that you're rolling.
Right.
It's still standard damage. So why, if that damage went to 0, would you go to dying 2? It just felt like it's not a critically doubled damage effect.
Right. If you the death save, you go to dying 2. If you critically fail a save against damage, you go to dying 2. Right?
Right.
And this, read this as a save against damage, mostly, or you could read it as its own
But
thing.
Most of those cases, you're also doubling the damage. You double the damage because it's a critical fail. This is a case where, like, you're not critically failing a direct damage effect. You're critically failing a stage of an affliction. It could be you're enfeebled too, right? But like,
you know why I like it? And I see what you're saying, and I do think it's a gray area. The reason I like it is there's so many times critical failure is meaningless in the game, more often than not. You know, in attacks, you know, unless you roll a 1, we don't go to the fumble deck. But like, if you roll 10 over, you get double damage. You know, we don't give a penalty for 10 under, or for critical failure.
No, I disagree. I know what you're saying.
We don't.
Specifically on attack rolls, yes. But that's it. Saves are horrible. And as a player,
for sure,
you are in constant terror of failing by 10. The game is brutal on those. And I think that's interesting. You know, we're always waiting for you to critically fail a save against the stunning fist, because that's a big difference. I do think critical fail is a difference, but you're right. Attack rolls, it doesn't really factor.
There's a lot of them where it doesn't matter. So I feel like anytime you can make a critical or a fumble hit home, it's nice. But definitely a gray area. Definitely a gray area.
So yeah, we'll try to pick one there and keep it consistent, but we'll see. The next time we have a poison like that, we'll bring it up. All right, let's do some quick listener mail and then get on out of here. Come on, Nash. What do you got? What do you got for Troy today?
Me? What'd I do?
It's time for listener mail.
All right, this one from Thomas in Denver, Colorado, aka Danger Box from Twitch. What's up, Danger Box? This question is for Troy, and that's why I said, let's see what you have to say, Troy. Of the recurring NPCs that have come out throughout the time on the Glass Cannon podcast, including Razzmatazz and Hubert, who is your favorite NPC, random NPC, recurring NPC in your time as the GM
at the Glass Cannon? I feel like we've had this question before.
Yeah, I don't remember it. It's been a while.
I think if I had to pick without really thinking too much about it, since I only have a minute here.
Right.
I think it's Renfall. I always come back to Renfall.
Wait, but I thought, yeah, I guess he is a recurring NPC, technically.
He came back, you know, I remember reading him and being like, what am I going to do with this guy?
I just felt amazing. I didn't even think it.
Yeah, I mean, I went into that being like, I don't know how I'm going to play him. I don't know what the goal is here. This is a guy that comes up. I need to find a hook for this guy. And I didn't find it until we were role-playing that first moment. I'm like, oh, okay, so now I have the hook. He's this aging ghost. It's like retired Florida retiree. And I don't know, for some reason, he really did it to me. I still will I'll hear that original conversation where he's talking about the prime rib special and whatnot.
995 sorcerer.
995 sorcerer.
Because it had this like Lord of the Rings epicness to him, you know what I mean? But then just the content going back and forth between him being this feeble old man, I really liked him. I also like when I was redoing some of the dropping ads into the back catalog of Giant Slayer, I came across Noxymara. And I really liked my voice for the first time we saw Noxymara. That's just like one thing. I was like, man, I was like, because I was watching Benedict Cumberbatch do Smog around the same time, I think, when Noxymara came out. And I was like, channeling that. And I listened back. I was like, when it was just an audio medium, because I never fucking care about voices. I was like, man, that Noxymara voice was pretty solid.
That was a good voice. That was a good voice. Great answer. Renfall's a great answer. I had forgotten about Renfall. God, he was funny.
995
sorcerer.
995 sorcerer.
That was awesome. We have run out of time here, but I wish I could get to more. Whatchamacallit? Rusty out in Melbourne, hang in there. I'm going to get your question on one of these weeks. Hang in there, buddy. It's a great question.
Oh, you got to go record. Now, you don't want to give me a softball?
No, I don't have a softball for you. Okay. It's a chunky one, and I don't want to get into it now.
Okay.
Guys, thank you. Thank you so much for listening, for watching. As always, we appreciate you so, so much. Remember, you got Streaming with Me and McD today and next week. You got Glass Cannon Podcast tonight, or tomorrow night, rather, 8 o'clock Eastern time. And Glass Cannon Live Boston premiering 8 o'clock Eastern Friday night. So lots of fun stuff coming. We're in Portland and LA next week, but there will be a FOD, so stay tuned for that. Have a great week and weekend, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Peace!
Do you like what you hear? Well, then it's time to make your membership official. You can start your 30-day free trial today and become an official member of The Nash at jointhenash.com with the promo code GCN30. That's jointhenash.com and use code GCN30. That's GCN30 to gain access to exclusive podcasts, ad-free episodes, and live streams you can't find anywhere else. Once again, it's jointhenash.com. Use code GCN30 at sign up to get your first 30 days for free. See what everybody else is talking about and join the Nash today.